Welcome to Women Reconnecting, a show dedicated to helping women discover the missing link to wellness by taking listeners on a journey away from stress, fatigue, and overwhelm to a life they love. It's time to ascend from the daily stresses of life by reconnecting to your inner radiance so you can play full out and feel alive. With your host, the Reconnection Catalyst herself, Lisa Mizells. Hello and welcome. I'm Lisa Mizells, founder of Femana and host of the Women Reconnecting Show. And today we have an amazing guest who's going to be talking about how to feel more spiritually badass in your life. So everyone, I want to give a big warm welcome to Thais. Now let me tell you just a little bit about her. She's a women's leadership coach, yoga and meditation teacher, speaker and writer, inspired by the belief that every woman has the power to be an activated leader in her life. Thais supports heart-centered change makers step into their greatness, make a bigger impact, and create a badass, expansive life. After struggling for years with an emotional eating disorder, anxiety, and several identity crises, she found the key to happiness, worthiness, and set out to support other women embody their spiritual journey and truly be the change. Thais currently works with clients through private coaching, mastermind groups, retreats, workshops, and speaking opportunities. Thais, welcome.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for having me.
I'm really excited to talk to you. I'm about this this idea of how to feel more spiritually badass in your life. So what do you mean by being spiritually badass?
You know, I think we often think of spirituality as this sense of Zen. You know, we think of those guys a long time ago who lived in caves and just meditated all day. And that's kind of not, it's not something that we can do now, right? We are fully immersed in the world. We don't even want that. We want to create something magical in our lives. We want to create a legacy. We want to feel embodied and fulfilled. And so when I created my brand around being spiritually badass, it's really this idea of how can we take spiritual concepts that we know and love and integrate them into our lives so we feel more audacious, we feel bold, uncomfortable, and we feel more aligned with our true voice and our true message. And that requires you to be a little badass. It requires you to stand up for what is right, even if that goes against what everyone wants and what everyone expects of you. And so it's a little bit of a rebellion, but from a place of innate worthiness and a belief that you are a messenger.
Yeah, standing up for yourself, having the courage and the belief, the passion to be truthful and be, you know, be able to stand up for what you believe in.
Exactly. You know, people, I say to my clients, we either lead our lives or other people lead our lives. Mm-hmm. And when you can stand in integrity with yourself and your values and who you truly are, that's when you can start having control and freedom in your life and not allow yourself to live by default and by other people's expectation of you.
So how do you get to that point? I mean, just maybe a little tip about how to get to that point of really knowing what your values are and what, you know, for our listeners who don't maybe are just starting on the path, how would they start out?
That's a great question. Part of understanding who you are is knowing that over the years, you've created a lot of beliefs and stories of who you are. That's not actually who you are. Most of the beliefs that we now live by, we've had before the age of 7. So we're really living the lives of 7-year-olds in an adult body. And that's why we often react so illogically or irrationally towards things. For example, we get very angry at someone over a situation that other people don't think it's that big of a deal. It doesn't mean that you're crazy. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be angry. It just means that you're probably carrying around some stories and beliefs from when you were before the age of seven that is now playing out in your life. So the first step is really to develop a sense of awareness of what beliefs are dictating your life. This can be simple as investigating your money stories and what your parents taught you about money, because 9 times out of 10, you're probably still abiding by those stories, such as money doesn't grow on trees or rich people are greedy. So of course, you're not going to be able to accumulate wealth and feel abundant in your life if you truly believe that wealthiness equals bad, or having money means that you're a bad person or that you're greedy. So it depends on, of course, what aspect of your life is troubling you the most. The best way to start is just to start writing down, what am I believing about this situation? What am I believing about romantic relationships or money or career? And notice how those beliefs are dictating your life.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, I always believe that starting with just being aware and you know, looking at the situation non-judgmentally, just kind of being the observer, right?
Exactly. And that is the hardest thing. And that's where the practice comes in, and bringing in help, spiritual mentors and people that will support you on the path. Because even though, of course, it's the first step, it's not an easy step to take. It requires guidance and a commitment to the path. But when you do that, everything has the possibility of changing, because you're looking at the seed that grew the tree of this now results that you're gaining in your life, instead of looking at the results, such as the lack of money and being angry and being playing victim and feeling stuck because you don't have enough money in your life. When you start cultivating awareness for the beliefs, you start to grow new trees. And when you can grow new trees, you create new results.
Yeah, there's just like little subtle shifts that make the biggest difference.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I know that I was actually just writing to somebody on that is a subscriber of mine about having those stories from a young age and carrying that emotional age with you as you react. So when you're reacting, you're at that emotional age. So you kind of have to pull that apart and untangle it. And it does take some guidance.
Yes, sure. Exactly.
Yeah. So how do you define spirituality?
For me, spirituality is the practice of coming home. Mm-hmm. I think we are all operating our lives kind of untethered, just kind of floating in the wind. I equate this to the imagery of a balloon on a highway. And these cars or these external forces are driving by us at 80 miles per hour, 60 miles per hour, and it just tosses this balloon here and there. And it can feel very jolting, can feel very hurtful and angry, and we're just reacting with one wind gust to another. Mm-hmm. And for me, I've always seen spirituality as an opportunity to come home to a place of center, to a place where no matter what's happening on the outside, you're not reacting to it. The other word I like to use is equanimity, and this spaciousness that we can create within ourselves, so that when things happen, it doesn't pull us and trigger us and react, because that kind of tension in our lives is where we start to self-destruct and where we start to break down relationships that are actually in our lives to heal us.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love your example of the balloon floating in the air, and just with every car that goes by, you know, redirecting it here, redirecting it there. And it does, when you're not in charge of your life, you feel like that. You feel like you're just being pushed around and you have no control. And I think that's where people get really frustrated and they feel burnt out and overwhelmed because they have no control. So just that subtle little shift can make a huge difference in the amount of peace, right? The peace that we have in our lives.
Exactly. And I know a lot of people view spirituality very much in this new age conversation of angels and tarot cards and mala beads. And I love viewing those things as a tool, but you don't necessarily have to believe it in order to find the healing that your soul craves. You don't have to believe in another world if that feels like a threat to you. You don't have to believe that there's ghosts. I mean, you don't have to believe any of those things to define your life by this spiritual connection, because I believe that we're all spiritual beings, right, on this human plane to learn the lessons of this school called life. And so there are certain beliefs that I think we equate with spirituality that are not necessarily spirituality. They're just a tool, and they can be a great tool, and they can really support us. But if for you it doesn't make sense, for you, if it doesn't activate any sense of love or tenderness, then it's not for you right now, and that's completely okay.
Yeah, I love that. It's like practical wellness, a practical spirituality. You know, you're really,
Yeah,
yeah.
I call it spirituality with a blend of psychology, because there's a beautiful science to both. And spirituality is also a lot about the language of love. And if we can look at God or the universe as a 100% embodiment of love, or the energy of love, then isn't that something we all want, right? Don't we want a relationship with love that feels really satisfying to us? Don't we want to be able to come play to a place inside of ourselves that is just 100% love, to hold a space for all the anger and sadness and rage that we all experience? So if we can feel that that is the universal way of connecting to who we are, is through that sense of love, then it becomes less about how it looks to other people, and whether you have an hour meditation practice, and if you read your tarot cards every day or hold crystals in your bra. I mean, it becomes less about that and more about what can you do with what you have at any given time to really bring yourself back to that space within you that is a full embodiment of everything and all of who you are.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. So you do a lot of work with women. And so what do you see as the biggest struggle for women right now?
Ah, such a good question. I think we experience a lot of struggles. And the biggest challenge that I see is that we do not yet know what it looks like to be fully in the feminine power. So, over hundreds of years, we've created a world that is very masculine driven, driven by men, patriarchy society, we call it. And up to this point, it's worked. It's been just fine, right? It's gotten us to where we are. We haven't killed the whole world yet. So, it worked. Unfortunately, we're not really utilizing 50% of what we're capable of, which is the feminine powers. And so I think our biggest struggle as women right now is how do we stand in our feminine powers? And with that comes the sense of surrender, the sense of collaboration, the sense of feeling our feelings and being emotional, which I think is our biggest strength. How do we step into that when there's such a strong society saying, no, we have to do it this way, and it's the masculine way? I think a lot of women are alienated from their lives because they're in the corporate world that dictates how they are supposed to run themselves and their lives, and it's not fulfilling. We also, there's a book by Sheryl Sandberg, Lean In, and this to me is the best example of this. It's a beautifully written book, and Sheryl has so much experience that I think inspires all of us. And much of the book is written in a way that says, you have to play the game like men do. You have to lean in like they do. And the problem with that is that we will never win the game that men have won for hundreds of years, because that's not how we are structured. We have different needs than men and different strengths than men. And so we can't keep playing their game and expect us to come out on top, which is why there's less CEOs, in corporate America that are women, and there are less women in government. It's because we're still learning how can we experience our power as who we are in this masculine society.
Yeah, I it's like the masculine is the driving, the power, the forcing, the resistance, that kind of energy, and the feminine is more of a flowing, like you said, emotional feeling. And I do you think that we're coming more into that though?
I think we are. I think it's great. The conversation is definitely there. It's very distracting, though, when we're still having conversations about thigh gaps and still having conversations, in the cover of magazines of what's the best way to give him an orgasm. I feel like that's kind of distracting us right now from our ability to step into our power. But it's exactly what you said. The feminine power is much more about embracing our strengths and not so much as trying to be like men. The challenge is that I know many women actually are pretty, they pride themselves in being ambitious and being type A and being the doing. And so I am by no means saying to those people, you're not doing it right. I'm simply inviting that there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance between the drive and a balance between the surrender, right? A balance between the doing and the being. And when we find that balance within our lives at different points of our lives, in our career, in our house, in our relationships, then we feel more at home in our lives and in our bodies. When we have too much of the masculine, especially as a woman, because our feminine powers are more innate within us, hence why, we're women. So when we put too much masculine force upon us, we feel that stress. And that's when we feel like we're not good enough and we're constantly running on the treadmill and feeling like we're getting nowhere and we're feeling burnt out, and then we don't know how to handle it, so we binge eat and then we numb ourselves out in front of the TV. That just isn't working anymore.
I love the the not so much doing, but being. It's being, it's the present. It's being, it's pulling more of the present moment into your life and just being with that. And when you're in the present moment, then your innate powers are just there. Is that right? Am I getting
Yeah,
it?
that's exactly right, Lisa.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. And what do you recommend for people who are feeling, not connected with their spirituality and their feminine power, and they're feeling stuck?
So when I have found in my life, when I wasn't connected to my higher power, when I wasn't connected to, the big questions in life, I was experiencing a lot of anxiety. I, experienced severe binge eating for a good 4 years of my life in complete denial that I had a problem until it got to be too much. And I hit that dark night of the soul where I just didn't know what to do anymore. And that's when I prayed. And I said, God, I don't really know who you are. I've been an atheist. Like, I don't really like you. I don't even know if I believe in you, but I need help. I need something. I'm willing to do it differently. And that's when everything changed. Not this huge transformation. I didn't, suddenly become enlightened, but I started to understand that it was time to try something new. And it was time to try self-love. And it was time to try being more of who I felt like I was, as opposed to how I should be. And it took another 3 years for me to even understand what that meant. But it was simply by inviting something into my life that I gave space for it to be filled up. So one of the most powerful ways that I find to connect with the higher power and our feminine forces and just all of who we are is to make space for it. And that can be by meditating. And if meditating is not in your practice, it could be by, praying. It can be by journaling. It can be by taking time to color. Anything that kind of slows you down away from the activity and the doing and the I have to do it my way and takes you into the, all right, I can make space. I can allow something else to come into my life right now. I do not have to have all the answers. I do not have to know everything. I can make space.
That's such a good supportive feeling when you don't have to have, I mean, you can trust in yourself and coming home and being aligned with yourself, but having that higher power, being connected with that higher power, it's like you're not alone, you're connected with everything, all that there is, and that's really supporting.
Yeah, it's extremely supporting, and it feels very easy to disconnect from that. I love the cartoon, and it's a caveman pulling a cart, and the wheel is, a square wheel, and they're pulling this cart, obviously not going very far because it's a square wheel, and someone comes in and says, "Hey, I've made a new discovery," and he's holding a circular wheel. And the response is, "Not right now, we're too busy."
Yes, that's perfect.
I love that because how often we get so busy in our to-do list that we don't even take a pause to see, is what we're doing even exciting us? Is what we're doing even feeling good for us? We feel like we just have to do. But what if there was something else, another energy that you could be inviting in, an energy of ease, an energy of doing what feels good and feels exciting? And sometimes that just means taking a step back and looking at the results that you're getting in your life. And if you're not getting the results that you want, trying something else and trying something differently.
And how many opportunities do we miss because we're so busy just doing? We've got the blinders on and we're not looking at anything else. And so we're missing all these wonderful opportunities that people call miracles, right?
In our society, it can feel very easy to just put the blinders on. And I find that it's usually when I slow down, I can hear just beautiful calling out of nature, inviting me to look at its beauty. I just posted this on Facebook the other day, but I've made it a point that I believe that when I hear birds chirping, it's actually a sign from God or from the universe saying, "Thais, hey, I'm here. Slow down, listen to me." And so now whenever I hear a bird, I just say, "Oh, yes, I'm here. I'm here. I'm nowhere else. I'm not in the future. I'm not in the past." So that's something I've created, a belief system I've created for me. And you guys that are listening can create whatever belief you want. Maybe you want to create the belief that every time you see a type of flower, that it's an invitation for you to slow down. Or every time, you see a billboard, I mean, it doesn't even matter, but anytime you see a word or you see an animal, then that's an invitation for you to slow down and just realize that you are being supported, even if you don't understand how. And that kind of helps us to come back to that feeling of, ah, oh, I'm connected. I'm not alone. I don't have to do this alone. And I can choose to have more ease and love in my life.
It's the old stop and smell the roses, right? I mean,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these statements are so cliché, but they always stem from a truth that we've become immune to hearing, and so now we have to create other ways of saying it, and it's still the truth.
I love that. And you brought up a really good point just a few minutes ago, when you were talking about your story. And I think it's really important for our audience to kind of understand this. You were talking about how your failures are your lessons and they've helped you grow. And a lot of times, I know people think of their failures as things to be ashamed of or things to feel guilty about instead of things that are actually enlightening them, quote unquote, right? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So, one of the biggest changes that I think that we can make in our mindset, in our belief system, is the shift that I experienced, which is believing that it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, that it's a vicious world, and that I am alone, and I have to do it, and I have to make space for myself, while simultaneously believing that there is no space in the world for me, that, and no wonder that I was in that binge eating, trying to expand my physical space, because it was my body's way of trying to change my belief system. So we can either go from that belief, which is life is against us, or you can change that to life is working for us. And when I went through that change in perspective of against me to for me, then it invited a whole new level of opportunity that maybe The reason I was binge eating was not because I am bad and wrong and I have no control over food, but maybe it's an invitation for me to notice where I lack self-love and where I lack acceptance of myself. And even now, I am so thankful for my binge eating because it would have never taken me on the spiritual path. I wouldn't be a spiritual teacher now. I mean, that for me was the absolute catalyst to my unfolding. And if I continued to blame myself for that whole 7 years of darkness and understanding, then I would never come into the light where I am now. So it's all about shifting the I had this experience, I'm bad, I cannot manage money, or I cannot manage myself, or there's something wrong with me because I messed up, or changing it to every experience I have is an opportunity for me to learn and to grow. I am not perfect. I do not claim my perfection. I claim to learn because I know that I'm in this school of life to learn, not to be perfect, but to learn and to uncover all of the things that are holding me back from understanding my perfection. Do you see the irony in that? If we believe that we are perfect from an egoic person point of view, then we will always fall short of that and we will continue to shame ourselves and guilt ourselves because we're not perfect. But if we understand that we are imperfect and that we have all these tendencies that are not perfect and that life is continually reflecting opportunities for us to learn of our imperfections, then what happens, and we learn and love it, when we love it, when we start to unravel all of the yuckiness, we realize from a deep innate place that we are perfect.
Absolutely. I like to say to my clients, life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you.
Yeah.
Things show up for you so that you can become more of who you want to be.
Exactly.
More than, yeah, I love that. So what are some things that people can do right now to feel more like a spiritual badass in their life?
One of the things that I recommend is one of the things that we've already mentioned, which is take a look at the results that you're getting in your life. And by results, I mean, look at how much money you're earning. Look at the relationships that are in your life. Look at the job that you have. Look at your relationship with food. Look at your relationship with your body. And wherever you are noticing that there is a dissatisfaction or a lack, it is not an opportunity for you to judge yourself, but simply an opportunity for you to develop awareness of where you are. Because you cannot change what you are not aware of. So first is developing a sense of, oh, this is where I am. It's like a starting point. It's like putting a Google Maps arrow right where you are. And then you can start to create a different actions to take you to where you want to be. Because of course, I think it was Albert Einstein, right? That he said you can't do the same thing and expect different results. Mm-hmm. So if you've been doing what you've been doing for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and it's not leading you to the type of results and relationships and money that you want, then maybe it's time to invite something in. And then the other thing that you can do is start to notice and take actions towards what you want. Because when we say, oh, this is what I want and I'm willing to take action on it, you are developing the muscle of being badass. Because what we want is the journey of the soul. And it's often very much goes against everyone's expectation of us, probably our own expectation of ourselves. And it will take you on a journey that is going to do the most amount of healing and love and growth for you and for your soul. And so when you say yes to your desires, you're essentially saying, yes, I have a purpose in this life. And it's by following these desires that I'm going to develop my strength and I'm going to develop my innate sense of who I am.
I love that. Thais, it's been so great having you on this show. I know that you have a free gift for our listeners. It's a 16-page meditation ebook, and it's going to help them develop a consistent practice. And I'm going to have that link on my blog post. So for the listeners, come on over to the blog post and get that meditation ebook so that you can develop a consistent practice. And Thais, where can people reach you if they want to know more about you?
Yeah, so you can reach me on my website, which is coachthais.com, and it's Thais like Thailand, Thai, and then instead of land, you add an S.
Love.
coachthais.com. And my meditation ebook, it's really exciting because it's not just a book. It has videos, it has audios to help you step by step learn how to develop a practice that feels really good in your life and it doesn't feel like a chore. And so you actually develop a habit from it. So you can get that there, and like Lisa said on her blog post, she'll have the link for you guys. And then I'm personally obsessed with Instagram, so you can find me there at instagram.com/coachthais.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much. All right. Everybody listening, thank you. Have a great day and make sure to continue to listen to the Women Reconnecting Show. Listen to Women Reconnecting, the only show that talks about the missing link to wellness and fulfillment, with your host, the Reconnection Catalyst herself, Lisa Mizells, and her guests as they share what's working now to feel alive and fulfilled in life. Would you like to ascend from the daily stresses of life and discover how to stop merely existing and how to play full out so you can feel alive again? Listen as guests share simple tips to step up your wellness factor and excitement for living so you can create the life you want. This show is not intended to replace any medical advice from a licensed practitioner. Consult your doctor before trying something new. Hello, everyone. This is Lisa Mizells, founder of Femana and host of the Women Reconnecting Show, where we bring you exciting guests that are going to give you different perspectives on tips and strategies and how to live a fulfilling life. And today, my guest is Banu Sikander, and she's going to be talking to us about how to use relationships for personal and spiritual growth. And I know this information is really, really important, and it's going to be useful to so many of the listeners out there. Banu is an MA, and she's an intuitive. She's also a psychotherapist turned relationship coach, and her purpose here is to help people grow personally and spiritually through their complexities of the relationships. So please give a big welcome to Banu Sikander. Welcome, Banu.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm happy to be here.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad to have you here. I know this is an important topic for women because we typically tend to kind of yield to other people when we're in a relationship.
Right.
And so I'm really excited to hear what you have to say. So tell me what are the typical challenges that come up for women in relationships?
Well, the first one is that I've experienced personally and I come across when I work with clients is losing sense of self and merging with the relationship to the point of forgetting who we are and why we're on this planet and what else we're here for and what we have to add to life and what else we receive other than the relationship. It's a really easy one to fall into, I think. Partially because of the, I would say, socializing and conditioning that we receive growing up, that relationships are and need to be the most important thing in our lives. And they are really important because we grow with through them and we grow with the people that we have a relationship with. But it seems it's pretty challenging for a woman to keep her sense of self and still continue feeding herself through other venues and other experiences in life. And this ties to the other one. It's you know, sort of unknowingly casting ourselves into roles that are expected from women. And, you know, the housewife and the mother and those come, I think, naturally by being in the relationship, in a marriage and having kids. But then they become sort of all of we are. And I talk to women and they're like, I used to paint and I don't have time anymore. Or, you know, I've always wanted to try scuba diving. And I'm like, why don't you? It's, well, because there's a whole bunch of reasons. Right. Because we merge with our partners to the point of forgetting that. And guys do that, don't do that as often as we do, I think. They still find ways, like they watch their Sunday football. You know, I'm giving that as a tip, as a kind of a typical example. They don't say, well, I'm in a relationship now, I should just give up watching my football on Sundays, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's that is so true. And I think, I know personally in past relationships that I have lost myself. And it was a big, huge wake-up call when I'm like, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm not... Yes. Who I am.
Yes.
And it's how to get to that point. So tell me maybe what your experience has been with self-love, because I think that's where that's what it centers around.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I found out too. In the beginning of 2013, I went through a really bad breakup, and I've experienced what heartbreak is for the first time in my life. Like, I just felt like this thump over my heart, and then it was excruciating emotional pain after that, and I was frozen for several months. And I would go to the beach and take a blanket and a pillow with me and just like lie down on the sand and just, you know, sleep. And I was kind of like in vegetative state. I wasn't able to eat or sleep much. And I lost 13 pounds in 3 weeks, and at 97 pounds, I had to drive myself to the ER because I was just unable to take in any food or swallow anything. And so just like during this vegetative state, I was like, what is this? Like, how could I be completely dead in every way in my life, unable to eat and do any of the simple stuff that people do during the day and just live life? How did I get here? And then it's like people would tell me things like, well, you need to love yourself. I'd be like, what the heck is loving myself? What does that mean? And that was the last thing I wanted to do, because I wanted someone else to love me. And when you think that way, this is where you end up, you know? So that was my biggest wake-up call, and I didn't really know what I was doing or how I was going to piece myself back together. So I called up a friend, a really good friend, and she flew over from California. I was living in Seattle at the time, and she stayed with me for 2.5 weeks and helped me nurture myself, and I would sit and eat with her and talk to her, and we make, you know, collages and go for walks. And she, I really owe my life to her in that sense, that her presence and her love helped me brought me back to a certain level where I could finally start thinking about what I wanted and how I was going to not repeat this mistake again.
Isn't it amazing how emotional pain can be so devastating that it affects you physically? And I mean, it like you were saying, it just shut you down.
Yes.
Completely.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's like I couldn't enjoy anything either. All the things that I was still doing while I was with my partner, but sort of sporadically and not consistently, the things I knew that gave me joy, like I love to dance, and I didn't want to dance. I like meeting new people and volunteering and going to events, and I wasn't doing any of that. And it was devastating. And so I had to start from scratch. Like, I had to literally rebuild myself. And it's been a journey.
Yeah. So how do you work through that? I mean, how can women, our listeners, work through if they're going through a painful breakup? Maybe you can give some tips on how they can work through that.
Sure. Well, I started after I went through another breakup recently, and this one was very different because I was able to give myself kudos for learning from that last one. That, you know, one of the things I made a mistake, I learned not to do anymore, was to stay in anger and resentment of the mistakes they made and also being unforgiving of myself. I look at it, relationships, I think breakups, I think, have, the way I've experienced it, have three stages. And there's the stages of grief that, you know, people talk about, five stages of grief. But the way I look at moving through a breakup now is three stages. The first one is coping. You're going to have a lot of feelings that come up. You're going to have anger and sadness and depression and, you know, in and out, like a whole gamut of emotions and anxiety, and you're going to miss them, miss some things about them, and you'll feel angry, and you may find yourself going back between emotions and crying. And so I really gave myself time to do the crying and the coping time. And the other piece is, you know, there's all these articles about, I agree with them, but about making healthy choices. And, you know, don't smoke, don't drink, don't overeat, don't eat ice cream. But, you know, if that's part of your coping, then do that. Just don't do it for the next 6 years.
Right.
You know, recognize that I am stuffing my emotions right now, because a lot of it is too much to handle. All of this is too much to handle for me all at once. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let myself grieve and process little by little. So it's okay to watch a movie, a feel-good movie, while eating your ice cream and eating your sunflower seeds, which is something I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's one. And reaching for support is another piece. I mean, and not burning only one friend out, is because I made that mistake in the last one. And they're like, okay, I'm kind of tired of hearing about your breakup. So extending your network and reaching out to other people and recognizing when you're being too much and being okay with that. And the other stage, I think, and these aren't linear, by the way, because it's just like anything. It's not just, you just, okay, I'm done with coping. Now I'm going to get into the stage of releasing and healing. The piece that I worked on in this last one with releasing and healing is, I put together a little questionnaire for myself that I could journal about. And I asked myself questions such as, what was my story? What kind of future did I envision with this person? And in this future story, what was I hoping to add to my life that I don't have now, or that I don't think I can have? So deconstructing that story and journaling about it helped me see that he wasn't the only person, he isn't the only person I can have that with. And writing it out sort of like helped me get it out of my system. Mm-hmm. And another one is part of the releasing, is part of the healing and releasing. Which parts of me did I get to actualize in this relationship? How was I seen? How was I accepted and recognized? And how did this person mirror me back to me in ways that I have kind of been blind to myself? And that helped me recognize the gifts that I received. And it wasn't like, it's easier to go into, well, he didn't do this, he didn't do that, he forgot my birthday, and he never told me this. So it also like helped me recognize that he was making an effort, and it wasn't this all like a failure that we both messed up. And then what did he add to my life? Which habits and skills or interest did I pick up from them? Because it's true. It's like, I really believe that we partner with people who mirror to us parts of us that are kind of lying dormant, and they're not really actualized in us because we either haven't given ourselves permission, or we learned to shut that side away long time ago when we were kids or teenagers. So, you know, I recognized that my love for being in nature increased because of being with him. And, you know, I got back into my love of making salads, which I had kind of forgotten about. So, you know, part of the second stage to me is recognizing the gifts. And the releasing piece is understanding and accepting that not all relationships are meant to last forever. And it doesn't make them a failure or you a failure. Once we recognize the lessons and the gifts that we gain from being with that person, and also understand, I mean, believing, really having faith that you're not done, you're going to fall in love again. And the best thing I could do for myself now is allow myself to feel as much as I can, and also process what I can and not stuff things in. And the third stage, I think, is rebuilding again. I think that happens with, it can happen while you're coping. One of the things that I do now for the coping stage is I immediately sign up for volunteering things, like volunteering for events or finding a place where I could be of help even 2 hours a week. And the other thing I did is I started picking up new skills and new interests. Like I started playing table tennis and put up an ad on Craigslist for looking for walking buddies. And I made sure that I don't talk about my relationship or my breakup with them, that I would talk about everything else and anything else and be interested in that person so that my life would start expanding instead of being all focused on grieving and hurt and pain.
Mm-hmm. That's so important too. When you help somebody else, it just takes you completely out of your own hurt, especially if somebody really needs your help, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You start believing in your own goodness and start recognizing yourself as someone who is worthy. It's really easy to feel unworthy after a breakup, regardless of who initiated it. So I think volunteering and contributing to life some way helps. Like one thing I developed over the last 6 months or so is I pick up garbage wherever I go. If I see it, and then I have this hand sanitizer that I carry in my purse. So as long as it's not completely soiled with food and I can pick it up from one corner, I just start, you know, collecting them and throw it into the nearest garbage can. And that's another way that I feel worthy and valuable as a human being, because I'm contributing to life in a small way.
Yeah, that's really important. I'll share with you, I remember one time when I was in college and I had met this guy, and I thought, you know, I was in love, and I thought, you know, everything was, you know, I had this bubble in my head, this dream that I thought was happening. It was probably not his reality at all, but the point, you know, he wanted to end it, and I was devastated, and I didn't understand why, and it made me mad, and it was I realized that it was just my pride. I'm like, this guy really doesn't mean that much to me. I haven't known him that long. It is my pride. That's why I'm upset.
Right. Good for you for recognizing that. Yeah.
That was a big aha for me, because that really helped me get through the pain. Because it really wasn't that it wasn't anything about him. It was about me.
Right.
Yeah. Right. It's always a lesson, like you said. It's a lesson. People that we meet are all there to support us on our journey to, in our life, to become the best that we can be, right. I believe. So I believe the same thing you do.
Sounds yeah. Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, that's really great. So what are some of the key points that make relationships actually work?
Well, the first thing that I recognize in some of the other relationships that didn't work out for me was, it's that, you know, my ego versus your ego battle, and it comes up as one of the stages of a relationship. So it comes up, but the more awareness we have around the fact that the connection that you have with your partner is separate than your ego or their ego. It's like two entities, you and them, and the entity in the middle is the relationship. And I think that choosing consciously, and that's moment by moment sometimes, especially when we're angry and frustrated, choosing the relationship over my own ego and my need to be right, that really is the biggest piece. And, you know, it's a work in progress for me, but I'm aware. And then one of the things I do is, if I recognize that I want it to be right in that moment, in that discussion or you know, the conflict that I had, then I go back once I find my center again, which I practice and do things to be able to get back to that space. Then I own it to my partner and, you know, say, this is, you know, when we were talking about this, I said this and that, but I now recognize that I wasn't really hearing you, that you're right. You need to be able to do this and that that you were talking about, and it doesn't really affect me like I think it does. And that also invites them to care about the relationship as a separate entity, almost as if it's an innocent baby. Mm. And it becomes a practice for both people that it's not you or me being right, but if one of us is right and the other is wrong, the relationship is going to suffer. Just there's no way around it.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other one was something that I had failed to do. Maybe I'll rephrase that. I was not aware of how important that was, is having fun together, not forgetting that the relationship is not a project. You know, it's like, especially people who are in the personal growth world and are kind of obsessive about it, like I am and can be. It was easy for me to forget about, okay, well, we haven't done something fun in a while, but here, let's go back and work on these relationship stuff that I don't feel are settled, and didn't really give myself or him or the relationship time to grow through fun, through doing things that are exciting and adventurous, and through joy. Because we do bond with that joy. The fun is the glue.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I used to think that it was the sex that was the glue, and that is a part of it, obviously. But having fun together, being kids together, is super important. I mean, it's as important as anything else, including sex, to me now.
Yeah. And isn't there something about adventure that brings you closer together?
Yes, absolutely.
That's
because we're all kids inside, yeah. And it's that's never going to change. We're always going to have an inner child, and you know, I tend to partner with people whose inner child I get along with. Like, my inner child likes their inner child, and so the more opportunities I bring up and create, and it goes both ways, for those little kids enjoy each other, it's just the world becomes a better place for me. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, having fun and bringing joy into a relationship is really, really important. I think for me, one of the important things about a relationship is to make sure that you can keep yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you were saying at the very beginning, if you get so merged that you do grow together, but you've got to have your separate. You have to have your separate entities, and each. Each other has to respect those.
Right.
You know, if I want to go to this event, it may not be anything that my husband wants to go to, but he's supportive of me. Whereas mm-hmm. like watching football as an example, you know, that has nothing to do with what I'm interested in, but that's his thing. And so you kind of respect each other's, what each other likes, what fills you up, what, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you
so
feel
true.
Yeah. So how do you see a relationship helping someone grow spiritually and personally?
Well, I look at it this way now from, having relationships where there's this phenomenon called projection. We project what is inside us outside into the outside world. So I have to come back to the idea that I need to own my judgments about the other person and recognize that they are pieces of me. It may be an inflamed version of it in them that I'm seeing, or it may be that I'm actually really just projecting, and that he's not, you know, this and that way, but I am, and I'm having a hard time owning it. And this is one of the pieces that when we get into the practice of and talking about it and owning it and taking back the projection, we actually free ourselves to be ourselves, and we find self-acceptance. And this helps us grow personally and spiritually, because then we're closer to being a whole person with strengths and weaknesses and the light and the shadow, and not just try to be like, well, I'm this good person who only does this and that, but, you know, my farts don't stink, and I don't lie, and I don't look at cute guys, and
yeah.
You know, it's like, well, no, I'm doing all those things, and I'm projecting them onto my partner, and as long as the projection stays on their side, I'll be missing out on a piece of truth that I could own for myself. And the other piece of, I think, the biggest thing for me in a relationship is we have to be constantly in a practice of forgiving. And, you know, if you can't forgive, you have to develop the ability to, And if you can't develop the ability to, you will just keep building resentment after resentment about this person's humanness, their mistakes, and the mistakes they make as they're growing and healing themselves. Because our partner is usually a mirror image of us in terms of how much self-respect and self-esteem they have and where they're in their own spiritual development. You know, if otherwise we wouldn't stay together, you know, if it was really extremely different. So we're pretty much side by side in close range in terms of where we are in our personal growth. This is why taking back those projections is really important, and practicing forgiving. I wouldn't have said this probably like 3-4 years ago, but I do now. I also pray a lot. Pray for, you know, the highest level of love to be revealed to us. And I did it even though my relationship ended. I still feel good about what I put into it. And knowing that I did my best helped ease the pain of the breakup and not being with that person anymore, because I always reached to my higher power and prayed to be shown what I'm not able to see and the strength to be able to face that. And the strength of heart and the power, openness of heart to be able to own that and include that into my existence and keep going back to forgiving, you know, what hurt me, even if it was little things, and sometimes it was bigger things. So I think that kind of like a general overview of how I see a relationship helping us grow personally and spiritually. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, no, I really love what you said. Having the other person as a mirror image of you, mm-hmm. Allowing you to be your highest level. I think when one or the other is growing at a different level, it scares both of the people. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say something else too, because I had something on the tip of my tongue, but I can't. Talking about relationships don't last forever. I think when I realized that there are people that are meant to come into your life and stay, and there are people that are meant to come into your life and just give you a little, like, whisper or breadcrumb, I like to say, of, you know, of your life journey. Mm-hmm. Just them to come in and give you a little lesson that you needed to learn and then leave because they're no longer necessary for your journey. When I realized that, I think that really helped get me out of the feeling wounded during a breakup.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, it is true. They're assignments. Relationships are assignments.
Yeah.
That's the line from Course in Miracles, and I didn't get that, and it really added to my relationship and breakup pain, because I would hang on for dear life as if I have to heal, I have to fix this and that about me, so that I stay with them forever. And I think that was one of the culprits of that breakup in 2013, where, you know, I crumbled into, you know, it almost killed me.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing. This has been really, I think, enlightening for a lot of people and for myself, just to be reminded of all these important things and mm-hmm. to be reminded to have more fun. That's what I need to focus on. Have more fun. I've been focusing on that actually, and I just need to bring my husband into it.
Yes.
Okay. So I hear that you have a website that's full of articles and free information. Do you want to tell our listeners where they can find that?
Yes. My website is workwithbanu.com, Banu, B-A-N-U. I have probably over 30 articles published, and I have several blog posts. I share, usually the way I write is I share intimate personal information, and I'm pretty transparent because that's what makes the information real. Anyone can look up a few articles and write about, you know, this is what you need to do in a relationship or in your life. And I try to stick to that authenticity. So there's a lot there. And so it's all free.
That's great.
Check it out. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So for our listeners, please go to my website, which is femana.com, in the blog, and I will have a summary of the interview here, and I'll have the replay, and I'll also have how to connect with Banu on her her website and her social media, and other things that I will include in the summary. So thank you so much, Banu, for being here with us.
Thank you, Lisa. I really appreciated the opportunity.
Oh, yes. Okay. And everybody, have a great day, and make sure to continue to listen to our episodes. Talk to you later.
As always, we appreciate you listening to Women Reconnecting, where you get inspired to reconnect with who you really are and create a life that brings you joy. With each episode, we bring you new strategies to feel your best and discover new possibilities for your life. Make sure to listen again as we bring you new and exciting guests that will help you to keep moving forward along your path so you can have fun, play full out, and really feel alive. Until next time, enjoy life.